Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You're listening to Sci-Fi Wire's Days of Marvel podcast. On today's episode, it's day 10 of our 12 Days of X-Men countdown, and we are talking about Logan. Stay tuned. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's host, Sci-Fi Wire Editor-in-Chief Adam Swiderski. On this podcast, we're counting down to the release of Dark Phoenix by revisiting all the X films one day at a time. Each day, we tackle a different movie, re-explore the plot, explore, get it? I just did that. That's right. Call out our favorite moments and discuss its place in the ever-expanding universe of X-Men movies. So before we jump in, I have to introduce my Sci-Fi Wire co-hosts joining me to talk about Logan today. My friends, my cohorts, my brotherhood of mutants. Brian Enk.
We're embracing the melancholy tone of Logan.
That's right. This is going to be the saddest podcast, a sad cast. This of is sorts.
You can cry along with
us.
And Caitlin Bush joining me here on the show. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Hello.
This is Brian Enk, the assignments editor of Sci-Fi Wire. You may remember me from 22 Days of Marvel, Day 3, Iron Man 2,
That's
2010.
Right. Another uplifting film.
Another great. Well, I say that very sarcastically.
We'll footnote that.
Yeah. And hi, Caitlin.
Hi. How is everyone? I'm Caitlin Bush, the associate features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire.
So Logan is a movie about two old men and one young woman. And here on this podcast, we have two old men and one young woman.
I thought that was very appropriate.
You know, if I get to be X-23, then
that's pretty cool.
I'll take it. Yeah. I will happily take being Daphne Keene.
Yeah,
I'll be Charles Xavier just because I'm about a year older than Adam. So yeah. I guess I would be Charles to your Logan.
Excellent. And I'll be Logan because my body is falling apart. Just like his
and
his
mine
film.
Already has.
Fighting so against
it,
you.
It works out perfectly. Anyway,
that's my mind.
And of course, as much as it pains me to do this, I have to introduce our fourth podcast cast member, Warvis. Hello, Warvis.
Hello. What's important to know is that the future overrun with Sentinels that we saw in X-Men Days of Future Past was avoided. However, the future we see in Logan may not be as dire, but it's definitely bleak. There's also a post-credit scene in X-Men Apocalypse in which a stranger opens up a cabinet and removes a vial of blood marked Weapon X and places it in a briefcase labeled Essex Corp. This is a tease for Mr. Sinister. While we know that Mr. Sinister is not in Logan, Simon Kinberg has confirmed that this scene does in fact explain how the villains of Logan eventually acquired the blood and the DNA that they use in their revised Weapon X program to create an army of young mutants, including Laura X-23.
Let's talk first about, I know we're going to get into the plot summary, but let's talk first about where we are in the X-Men world at this time. We have had a number of X-Men films by now. This is number 10. As we've pointed out, several different incarnations of the X-Men. Deadpool has been out. Another brings us more X-Men that we hadn't seen before. The last film before this, X-Men Apocalypse, which was following up on the highly successful Days of Future Past. Some would say not quite as successfully. Yeah, it's just, and Wolverine, not really a big part. Was he in Apocalypse at all? I don't remember if he even shows up in a cameo.
He has a flashback.
Yes.
In the narrative, it takes place in the past.
Right.
So we see a younger Logan briefly in Apocalypse.
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that part. And now this is the Logan movie. There have been a couple movies that have been focusing on X-Men, on Wolverine, I'm sorry. He's obviously been the most popular character to come out of all this, the most popular actor, Hugh Jackman.
17 years, this being his ninth movie.
Wow.
As Wolverine.
That's amazing.
It's incredible.
What a run.
Well, I was just reading today, I mean, we knew this, but he holds the Guinness World Record most times playing a Marvel superhero specifically.
Excellent. And Probably that will stand forever at this point.
Exactly.
But now we get something completely different. And this is an interesting thing. At this point in the world, right, this is 2017, this movie comes out, there's this huge focus on continuity and shared universes. And, you know, Marvel is doing their Marvel thing, which they have been doing for a long time at this point. DC is really giving it a go with Justice League, et cetera. And out of the, in the middle of this drops Logan, which is
out
most decidedly not that, right? They were just like, we're going to tell a story that has nothing to do with anything you've seen before from the X-Men most for the most part, and enjoy.
On some level, I kind of admire the X-Men movies for just throwing our idea of canon and, you know, our obsession with interconnectivity out the window and being like, you know what? We're just going to make an old man Logan movie set in the year 2029. You don't know what happened and you're going to deal with it.
Right. I love that about this movie.
It's great.
I think it was also a decision made on the fact that this was probably and is Hugh Jackman's last appearance.
Right. Mm.
And they wanted to base a story that was a lot more character driven, a lot more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
To give him his last hurrah, as it were.
So, Caitlin, you mentioned Old Man Logan.
Old Man
which
Logan.
Which was somewhat an influence on this. Do you want to talk a bit about the comic? Do you have any connection to the comic specifically?
I read it when I was, had originally, you know, we learned about Logan, it being part of my job to read up on all of that.
Sure.
But I do know that my cousin really, really loved the Old Man Logan run for a long time. And basically all I know is that it also involved Hawkeye.
Yeah, have you
which
read,
was always very fun.
Have you read Old Man Logan?
Old Man Logan is one of the graphic novels I own.
Ah, there you go. It
that's
is
delightful.
Bananas. And that's why I think when they announced this movie and people started talking about Old Man Logan being a part of it, there was a lot of like, how far are they really going to go with this? Because Old Man Logan, for those who haven't read it, takes place in a post-apocalyptic world. And it's just like Magneto rule, different villains rule different parts of the United States.
Very
it's
Mad
very
Max.
Fury Road.
Yeah,
I was gonna say.
Yeah. It's really out there. The Hulk is a cannibal. It's just bananas. And so the thought was in they just couldn't do that. And first of all, they didn't own the rights to half the characters like Hawkeye who are in the comic.
Right.
And then it would have been a little cartoonish, I think, to take it that far. But they did kind of take a lot of elements from it, right? Which is you've got this a post-apocalyptic world of sorts. It's not really post-apocalyptic. It's 2029. But there's been a sort of mutant apocalypse where mutants are not being born necessarily.
For 25 years now.
Right. Yeah. And it sets that up. And into this world comes, or, you know, I guess he's been there all along, a Wolverine who is older, who is broken down, who is, his healing factor is starting to fail.
With the adamantium on his bones is literally poisoning him.
Yes.
I believe the very first image we see of him, where the title Logan actually comes up, is Hugh Jackman on his back.
Yeah.
As the dudes are trying to take his car.
That's right. That's right.
The opening line of the movie being, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
And again,
this is not the Wolverine we saw in Berserker mode in X2.
Absolutely not. And we talked about this in the original X-Men podcast way back in episode 1, but it was so interesting over the course of the X-Men franchise watching Hugh Jackman get progressively more ripped as we went along. Like in X-Men, he's a muscular guy, but he's a muscular looking guy and that's it.
He's a musical theater guy who went to the gym.
That's exactly right.
Wolverine.
That's exactly right. By Days of Future Past, he's just like,
he's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane.
He looks uncomfortable.
So it's nice when we get to Logan and we're starting to see, you know, the effects of actual age for the first time and his body not being what it once was. And boy, is he down and out. He's drinking. He's driving a limo for obnoxious.
He's got reading glasses.
Yes, exactly.
That was really struck home for me. Not so much the healing factor slowing down, but the fact that he had to put on reading glasses was one of the saddest images, I think, in that first act.
It's a fantastic little character detail.
Yeah.
That just like it brings up so much by saying so little.
Because I think one of the things about the healing factor is all the permutations that you start to get into, right? Like, how hurt can he be? Can he be down to his atoms before he regenerates and stuff? And so something like reading glasses kind of gets into that. It's like, oh, it's failing so bad that his eyesight is going, you know? And I think that's a really smart way of getting that across without coming out and saying it. Mm-hmm. And the setup, so we got Logan, he's living in the desert in an abandoned smelting plant with Charles Xavier, who, if Logan is not doing so well, Charles Xavier is in a bad one. He's in a super bad one.
He's not doing good. He is, I believe, 97.
97 is correct.
At this point.
Is it mentioned that he has Alzheimer's? Is the term Alzheimer's used?
No, it's just dementia.
A form of dementia that causes seizures.
Right.
Specifically.
And these seizures are, as we see early on. So so Logan and Xavier are living out in the desert in the smelting plant with Caliban, who is there to help take care of Xavier while Wolverine's out doing his limo driver thing. And as we see, Xavier's seizures are not just physical, they are mental and telepathic, and they create crazy telepathic earthquakes of sorts that really mess with your head.
What are you doing to me?
Charles. Come on.
Kind of seems almost like it affects gravity and the way that you're able to move and think. And of course, because Logan still has a little bit of his healing factor, he's less affected by it.
Which is why he can take care of Xavier. And Xavier is just not all there mentally. He has his moments of lucidity, I think, but overall he's just really pining for a time that was gone. And I think we get the impression, I don't remember if it's straight out said, that he caused some sort of major cataclysm of sorts with his seizures and his mental deficiency now.
I believe he meant to think that he is responsible for several deaths.
Including the X-Men, right?
Killed seven X-Men
at the School for Gifted Youngsters.
Westchester.
It is, like, in many ways, Charles Xavier's in this film is as heartbreaking as Logan. Mm. It's with Charles, such an incredible leader and such an incredible teacher and influence on so many young lives, and now he's old and lost his mind.
And he killed some of them, which has to be his worst fear in the world. He's trying to help these kids and these people that he's taken into his lives, his family, and then he killed some of them because he can't be in control anymore.
And it's like the degeneration of the two things for each of these characters that are most important. Like, for Charles, it's his mind has always been his most powerful asset. For Wolverine, it was his body and his ability to heal, and all of that is being taken away from them.
Comic book movies, folks.
Yeah, man.
Woo!
Yeah, it's a page turn. So anyway, but then out into this drops a surprise in the form of a nurse who comes to Logan's.
Wolverine. I knew it was you.
Fuck.
Please! I'm in trouble. You're the only one that could help.
I've got this girl, and she's on the run. Oh my God. And
I need you to take her to North Dakota.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about this is that this is based on her reading about Wolverine in an X-Men comic book, which was an interesting meta touch, right? That this is a world where the X-Men at one point were so popular that they were comic book characters as well as actual real people.
I like it.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I love touches like that in stories and such. It's very similar to watching Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, where the Chris Pine Spider-Man has, you know, his own like Christmas special and all of his albums and everything. It's of that same caliber, which, of course, a completely different tone.
And it just sets up an interesting world, too, where, you know, we've always been in this situation where mutants were hated and feared. And I guess at one point in this timeline, there was a time when they were celebrated enough to be comic book characters. So that's sad, too, that we're now in this place where that's certainly no longer the case. But the big surprise of all this is that the little girl is, according to the nurse, Logan's daughter.
Biological
daughter. So what we end up finding out is that this nurse comes from a program which I believe, did they say it's Weapon X
Transigen.
Thank you. Transigen. That is basically trying to create mutant soldiers. And at one point they got a hold of Logan's DNA. And out of that comes Daphne Keene, not the actor, but the character that she plays in the film. I believe Daphne Keene was born in a normal
slash
fashion.
X-23.
Yes. I don't know if she's ever called X-23 in this, but
she is not.
Based on the character from the comics, kind of a similar thing. And the debut of Daphne Keene, the actor, who is fantastic.
She's good.
So good.
In this movie.
Oh my God.
And, you know, these are Hugh Jackman in this role particularly is very comfortable I mean, Patrick Stewart is Patrick Stewart, you know. So she's got some big people to play against, and absolutely holds her own.
Yeah, she takes her piece of that movie for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
But of course, this little family cannot live in peace because, surprise, the Reavers are here. These guys who work for Transigen, led by Boyd Holbrook.
Boyd Holbrook.
I don't actually remember his character's name, but you might as well just call him Boyd Holbrook. Pierce, thank you. Although I will say, in movies like this, you often get that kind of character who's like the antagonistic henchman leader. He's a little over the top, but I think Boyd Holbrook actually does a good job.
Oh, he's great.
Movie.
He's
plays
terrific.
It well.
Yeah, this is a character that easily could have been just stupid, and whether it's the direction or his performance or whatever, it works.
There's also some subtle stuff he does where you get a sense that his character might feel a little bit that he's in over his head.
Yeah.
That he's in a world, especially when he first meets Logan, he says,
"As I live and breathe, the Wolverine." And he's a junkie now.
Like, he admits to being a fan and all like, that stuff.
It seems like he's in this world that he's not really supposed to be in.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a humbleness to his character too.
And we get so here's where we get our first set piece that shows us that Laura is not what we, you know, the helpless child that we think she is, because she slaughters a whole bunch of dudes
and walks out with one of their severed heads and throws it at them.
Yeah.
Which is the moment that you just realize, oh, she's not here to fuck around, man.
Laura. No.
Right. Which shows, you know, she's surpassing her parent because she actually wins a fight, unlike Logan, who never wins a fight in any of these movies. But I digress.
Touché.
But I digress. Okay, so that happens. We get a big car chase, and the next, we see the head of Transigen, Dr. Xander Rice, arrives, and they take Caliban prisoner, which certainly is no good for Caliban. But then we get a little segment in Las Vegas, right, which is where they go to hide.
We see the full destructive force of what Xavier is.
Yeah, because so when the Reavers get there to attack them, Xavier has a seizure. And it's mighty impressive. The entire hotel freezes. Everybody gets just frozen. And even Logan, who is not as susceptible to these things, has to fight through it like he's fighting against a very strong wind.
And I will say that scene, the violence across the board in this movie is astonishing.
Yeah.
And very intimate and very human. That scene, I think for the first time, I had a complete appreciation for what exactly Logan's claws are,
right,
and what they can do to human flesh and heads and bone. Seeing the claws work in slow motion during the seizure is, I almost had a panic attack.
Yeah,
like it made me like very, very uncomfortable.
It's so trippy.
It's so visceral, and it's so, again, I keep saying it's a very intimate movie,
right?
And it's so personal.
Well, and that's one of the things I love about this film, because I've gone on record previously as saying, you know, things about movies like Avengers Age of Ultron, where you've got dozens and dozens of CGI minions getting thrown at these guys and they're just swinging away, and Logan, all the violent as Logan is, it doesn't feel gratuitous.
It has a purpose.
Yeah, it has a purpose, and it is that personal and intimate, and like it shows what you're actually like when you stab someone through the neck with your freaking claws. It's not just like, oh, that's cool. It's like, whoa, he just, you know. And especially in this scene, because nobody can fall down, right? They're all frozen by Xavier's telepathic hurricane, or whatever you want to call it. So you get that crazy, I want to call it great, but that really fascinating moment where you get to the end, Laura finally injects Xavier, so the seizure ends, and then all these bodies just drop.
Amazing.
It's also worth noting that this is the first time we've ever seen Logan in action in an R-rated movie, too, so you get to see that violence in whatever form that it takes.
Right.
Anytime he's killed people in the past, it's, you know, it's in PG-13 as violent as the other X-Men movies can be. You actually get to see like those very intimate claws through the skull moments because it's rated R.
Yeah, and you know, we got that from Wolverine's first line being the F-bomb. I mean, this is, you know, Fox, feel like everybody thought Deadpool was a huge gamble, and this is, could they have gone this far with this movie if Deadpool had not existed? I would say probably not.
Probably
not. Or would
not.
They have? But I'm really glad it did, because this story, it just feels, I don't know, if it, this story to be told is in a PG-13 way would be difficult.
It needed to be raw.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So anyway, after that little interlude, then we set up to our next set piece, which is that Logan, Laura, and Charles end up with a family, right? Is that next chronologically in the film?
The Munsons.
The Munsons, some farmers.
Sweet, sweet people.
Yeah, surely to, so nice that they are surely going to do well in this harsh and cruel world in which we are.
It involves rescuing horses on the highway.
That's right. Mm-hmm. From self-driving trucks. The nightmare of self-driving trucks.
Which is another very visceral and really...
2029 future thing.
Wow, the self-driving trucks were so... They're like monsters barreling down the highway.
They're hauling ass, yeah.
I do love the line from Charles.
No, we have to keep going. Someone will come along.
Someone has to come along.
It's like, well, that's... I feel like that's just the X-Men right there. Someone had... Like, no one else is going to do it, so...
Well, and Charles is so trying to hold on to this...
Hero.
You know, yeah, this heroism, this altruism, and man, Logan is over it. Mm-hmm. I think we can see.
It has been for, and has been
for
time.
A while. And then you get this great moment of Charles calming the horses, right, with his telepathy, which is like, oh, this is a nice little moment
Very
of
nice.
Peace. But of course, you know, and then we get a little action with Wolverine helping Mr. Munson with these guys who are interloping on their lands. But this wonderful, peaceful family scene that happens, right, where they have dinner, which is one, this little family unit that's being built with Charles and Logan and Laura. It's just so nice.
It's lovely.
It's really heartwarming.
It's lovely. And then it becomes a goddamn horror movie.
Yeah.
It becomes a horror movie.
Yeah.
In the most visceral, in just disturbing
almost,
way.
Almost, I think they have to be punished.
For them, having for that moment of happiness.
Yeah.
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 You know, and absolutely. And to the point, which I'll let you go into, but the most nightmarish thing about this sudden horror film is that Logan has to, like, face himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. That leads to the next big reveal, right? So we've got Xavier sleeping in bed and
Rice has unleashed this monster.
This monster, which is X-24.
Yes.
The clone version of young Logan, like young clone Logan, full prime CGI masterpiece that he is.
Hugh Jackman in Oklahoma, 1998.
That's right. That's right. He's jacked. He's back to being jacked, and boy, is he crazy. And he kills Xavier.
I think I finally understand you. Logan.
And of course it is right before he stabs him, but before he is killed, he sees the silhouette of Logan, of X-24 in the doorway, and he thinks that it's Logan, and so he starts talking and he's crying and he says, I remember what happened in Westchester, I remember what I did, and I know why we've been running, and I think I finally understand you, Logan. I understand why you run all the time. And then X-24 kills him. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, Charles thinks that it is Logan that's murdered him.
Yeah.
And it's
and that's
just,
how he dies.
Oh,
so tragic.
God.
That's how he dies.
Killed me.
Yeah.
Oh, I cried so hard.
It's really bad. And it's just such a this whole sequence is just so harrowing and oh God, it's
a horror movie.
It sucks. Yeah.
It absolutely becomes a horror movie.
And I mean, this is like the nadir of the entire film. It's like things could not get much worse because X-24 then proceeds to slaughter the entire family, including the young chipper son. And man, they get back and everything is just bad. But like most Frankenstein's creations, X-24 cannot be controlled by his creator.
Mm.
And his berserker rage takes over and he just kills everybody. He kills the enforcers. He kills the Munsons.
Does he kill Richard E. Grant?
He does not kill Richard E. Grant. Richard E. Grant kills himself.
Oh, yes.
By setting off grenades.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the truck.
To stop the transigen.
Yes,
folks.
Exactly. And then Logan.
No, Richard E. Grant is Dr. Evil.
Oh, Dr. Evil.
Oh.
You're right. I'm thinking of Stephen Merchant, who
yeah.
is
right.
Caliban. No, Richard E. Grant, I believe, survives. He is injured.
At some point, he buys it.
He's injured by the grenades. Yes, of course he does. And X-24 gets defeated with help from Will Munson. But he also dies.
Because everyone dies.
And by this point, this is on the front lawn
if
of,
you've
this,
ever
of
listened,
this nice farmhouse.
Yeah, to Typo Negative, there's a song called Everything Dies.
Which Peter Steele.
And the lyrics go like this. Everything dies. Everything dies. everything dies. And that should be the theme song for this film.
Peter Steele, R.I.P., yeah. looked to the future.
We definitely have the rights to that. We're going to play it here.
And was
inspired.
And listen, like, we're being jokey about this, but this is just really, this whole scene is just so tragic and really grabs you, especially because the moment of peace and family that you get right before it does not feel cheap or cheesy. It's just, everything feels earned. So that when this all goes wrong, it just really gets you. And that is embodied, I think, in the next scene that I like to highlight, which is where Logan buries Charles Xavier. And
he's injured.
They escape. Yeah, and he's really badly injured. And the age and decay are overtaking him. And he can barely do this. And
and there's nothing to say.
That's the thing, too. That
there's
moment where
he
finally buries him and then he can't. You know, he's ready to give some profound speech about Xavier being dead, and he just, it's not there. There's nothing to say. You're right.
It's got water.
Really effective and really great work from Hugh Jackman, I think, in this scene.
Absolutely.
Particularly when he loses it and just starts like wailing on his truck.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, again, this movie does such a great job to me of showing and not telling.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like he could make there could be dialogue about how, whatever he felt about Xavier and what he feels about the fact that it's all falling apart. But we just see it and it's sold so well in that performance and in that moment. But then
he wails on the car
and
then
it's too much for
falls.
Him. Once again, Logan loses a fight, this time with a truck.
Using a shovel.
A fight he picked.
That's right.
By the way.
That's right. So,
and then you have Laura just sitting there staring at him like this crazy dude.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. So she picks him up and takes him to a doctor and persuades him to follow through and take her to North Dakota, right? Even though he's pretty convinced that it's all bullshit.
There's a lot of yelling, a lot of arguing.
Yeah. And she speaks English for the first time, I believe, in the film.
Yep.
Yes.
What have we been doing this whole time?
It was so great. Oh, man. They're so good together. Their chemistry together is so fantastic. You know, again, Hugh Jackman is a tremendously generous actor, and Daphne Keene takes every advantage of that, and they really work well together. But then they get there, and surprise, it's not bullshit. There is a community of mutants, of young mutants, children from Transigen.
They've been followed and tracked
by
Transigen across the country because, you know, why?
Why would they get away?
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Why should this be a happy ending?
They're living in a delightful treehouse.
They are
right?
living in a delightful
yes.
treehouse.
Yes. They have a pulley system.
Oh, it's so good. That's something. Yeah. That's something.
Like
Logan
Lost
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very Peter Pan. Very Lost Boys.
They put him on the pulley system.
I remember
yeah.
that's a great scene where they're all giggling while
yes,
they shave
yes.
him.
They're all like gathered around and they're like,
yeah.
"Oh, the Wolverine!" And they give him the mutton. They give him the mutton chops
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that are so characteristic.
Yeah. Very, very. It's just so fun watching old grouchy Hugh Jackman interact with these kids
they're all, you know, Wolverine fans. They're
yeah,
all X-Men
yeah, yeah.
comic fans.
And you know, the big thing here is Chekhov's adamantium bullet, right? So we learn about this adamantium bullet that Wolverine has been carrying around because he was going to kill himself with it.
Now, this was a long time ago, and I kept it as a reminder of what I am. I was thinking of shooting myself with it. Like Charles said.
And he's so disgruntled that he's not going to follow those kids as they try to get to Canada. His work here is done. Of course, those kids are immediately captured by the Reavers. And guess who it's up to save them?
Wolverine.
That's right. The Wolverine.
The
yes.
Wolverine.
Who trips balls on some serum.
Yes.
That gives him the berserker rage. Gives him basically his mutant powers back.
Yep.
And boy, howdy does the big fight scene take place where he runs through the woods and just...
Oh, the woods set piece
yeah.
is amazing.
Him and Daphne Keene just slaughter the hell out of everybody.
Slicing everyone up.
It's great. And it's a lot of fun watching the way they choreograph the action of those two working together. Like she jumps off his back and attacks some people.
Mm-hmm.
And
in this incredibly idyllic setting, too.
Yeah.
Like the peaceful woods.
Yeah.
And then you see all of the kids using their own powers.
Oh, it's so satisfying. It's so satisfying.
But of course... We did not see X-24 die, and as we know, Wolverine has a healing ability, so he's there.
Can't keep a bad guy down.
Man, yeah. This is when Rice gets it, by the way.
Okay.
Transigen.
Oh, right, yes,
Wolverine
yes.
Logan shoots him.
So
Pierce
long,
is injured.
Richard E. Grant.
X-24 shows up, and boy, is he pissed that his dad is dead, Rice. And so they fight. And
it's brutal.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know what, that Hugh Jackman versus Hugh Jackman fight doesn't feel, and this is a term that gets thrown out a bit too much, but for lack of a better term, it doesn't feel like fan service.
Right.
Mm.
It's like, what if Wolverine fought himself? Right. Here we go. No, it makes sense. Like so much else in this film, it makes sense in terms of the character and in terms of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting if you compare it to something like the Captain America versus Captain America fight in Endgame, which was entertaining as hell.
But it is fan service.
But it's absolutely fan service. Yeah. You
good
know?
Fan service.
Sure,
but.
Yeah. But this is just, it's necessary. And it's
he's got to face himself. That's the last thing he has to face is himself.
Given how much self-loathing Wolverine is carrying around in this film, it's metaphorically very sound for that to happen. But he does not defeat himself necessarily by himself. In fact, himself defeats himself.
That's what the script. That's actually right. From the script.
That's right. Himself defeats himself.
The day they were shooting, they looked at that in the script like, what?
Yeah.
Well, let's just wing it.
So young Wolverine impales old Wolverine on a tree branch. And boy, does that suck. And old Wolverine looks like he's pretty screwed. But remember that adamantium bullet we were talking about earlier?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we should use that to shoot young Wolverine in the head.
Might be helpful.
And they do.
And Logan, and Laura does it.
Yes. So, which is actually, that works for the metaphor too, because his relationship with Laura is what helped destroy or helped kill his old self-loathing and the rage he had inside of him and allow him to be at peace as a person.
And she is a part of him.
Yes.
So in a way, he is defeating himself as well.
That's right.
That's
true.
There are levels upon levels.
This is the most galaxy brain analysis of this action scene that's ever happened, I swear.
This movie.
Yeah. No, but it's really cool and, you know.
And then...
That's basically the end of the conflict, right? Because the kid mutants have... basically also murdered a bunch of people, but they deserved it. They had it coming because they were making those kids into prisoners.
Including Pierce.
Yes, Pierce gets it. And then, okay.
The moment.
That's the climax of the action of the film, right? And now we get the denouement, which is probably, for me, the most emotionally affecting scene, possibly one of the most emotionally affecting scene I've ever seen in a comic book adaptation.
Mm. Yes.
Not, you know, I'm leaving like Unbreakable or superhero movies like that out of this, but something like, you know, out of the MCU, out of the X-Men franchise. I mean, this is Wolverine has gone through so much and now he is going to die finally. And this is also Hugh Jackman's goodbye. And, you know, of course he dies slowly and Laura is there and there's the moment of, you know, her calling him her father. I'm getting verklempt just thinking.
I know. It's astounding. It's amazing.
And he tells her not to ever give in to being the weapon that she was made to be.
This is what it feels like.
Which has been his theme for the entire arc of his character in all these films.
Yep. And so if the thing that he leaves her with, if there is one thing that you ever do, is always try and do the right thing and be a good person, and be the person that Charles would want you to be, et cetera, et cetera. And it's very nice. I cried like a baby during this film in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, people talk about comic book movies and kind of being a certain level of kitsch, but I mean the drama in this film I feel is so human and so not over the top and not cartoony, you know. It's all very real. It's about,
oh, in many ways it's a father-son story.
Exactly.
And it's a new age
Western father-daughter story.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, so that moment, man, it's just beautiful. And then of course we get the moment that really got me, which is they're having this little funeral for Wolverine, all the kids, before they all go across the border to Canada and ostensibly safety. And they have a piece of wood in the ground as a cross, right? And then before she leaves, Laura takes it and puts it in sideways as an X. And if you could think of a better send-off for Hugh Jackman than those two moments of his death and then that X, I can't...
It's the best final image of 2017.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
Absolutely.
And then you just see the children wandering off into supposed safety.
Getting more and more out of focus, and we just stay on the X.
On the X, which is just perfect. honestly, like, if they had stopped making X-Men movies at this point, you'd be like, okay.
I would have been satisfied.
They wrapped it up, you know? But that's not the case, obviously. We have more coming. And probably more in the future.
The only thing that could have been better is we stay on the X and then a little mouse crawls over it.
What's the significance of the mouse? Or you just like the idea of a mouse?
Disney.
Right. Oh, my God.
All right, I can't wait for the inevitable sequel to this film where they're like, actually, we dug up Logan's bones and regenerated him. And it's like, please don't do
that. Thanks, Kevin Feige.
If you're listening, Kevin Feige and Disney,
please don't ever do that. Let this thing be
the perfect individual time capsule that it is. So that's
I would love to see a Daphne Keene X-23 Wolverine movie.
Yeah. So that's the plot.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's talk about our favorite moments. We already kind of dug into some of them as we went along. I mean, Brian, do you want to start? Is there anything that, I mean, even if we've already touched on it, is there something that you'd point out as your favorite?
You know what I really like? I really like the scene where they escape from where Charles and Logan are staying in Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
And when Pierce first shows up and we meet Laura, and Charles and Logan and Laura are in the car and they have to get out of there via the car. There's an incredible sense of, I just like the way Logan is driving that car and the way Charles is kind of being jostled in the back. And the way there's just this like intense chaos of like getting out of that area.
They're like trailing pieces of fence.
This is what like car chases aren't cool. It's like this is what would be a wreck, and it would be hard to control
harrowing.
A car that's like, you know, and like there's Charles Xavier, age 97, freaking out in the back.
Yeah.
About this. So I really like that escape scene. And I'm also very fond of the, as you call, you keep adding different natural disasters. The psychic, you said hurricane, you said earthquakes.
Earthquake, yeah.
So let's say tsunami. Tsunami that happens at the casino.
Yeah.
Is just in terms of the choreography and the technology and just the wonderful actors who are having to do that in some capacity, move that way. And
yeah. Caitlin?
I think my two of my favorite moments, other than the moment with Charles right before his death, was just horrifying and beautiful. I love when we actually just first see Charles and he is in a state of dementia and he's like rolling around in there and he's muttering to himself and he's talking about
New Mutants, a young one. There are forces trying to kill
forces.
They want help.
Forces. It's too bad you're not in that business anymore.
The best way I think that I've seen a superhero movie allude to everything that had happened in the past, but be like, none of that matters anymore.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we are now, and you know that stuff, but this is a completely different space. And then I also love when Daphne Keene goes into the convenience store and she's stealing all the stuff. And just opening the bag of chips and takes the big sunglasses and this dude comes up. He's like, what are you doing? And she like flips him and is getting ready to kill him. And Logan comes in the door, grabs her and says, not okay. Like his one moment of parenting.
Yeah.
And then he steals a cigar on the way.
He takes a cigar. The cigar is a nice touch there.
Yeah. As much as Patrick Stewart does a great job and Daphne Keene does a great job, this is so Hugh Jackman's movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, he just brings, he's owned this character from the beginning, and where he takes him in this film is just so perfect. It's perfect. It's a perfect way for it to all culminate. I mean, I think for me, there's a couple of scenes. I think we touched on the Logan losing a fight to the truck, you know, and I make a joke about it, but it's just I'm a big fan of physical acting. You know, there's a lot you can do with words and there's a lot you can do with your voice, but if you can tell a story with just action of your body, I think that is amazing, and he does it so well here. Just the depths at which Logan is existing in that moment of despair and everything is so well communicated. So there's that, and then I gotta go with the goodbye, the final death scene. And I wouldn't see, you know, it's funny because it's not like, well, that scene was awesome, you know, like it really blew my mind, but it was just so well done and it was so emotional. And we as fans have been with this character for as long as Hugh Jackman has, you know, so it makes you reflect back on his entire arc and what it was like when people, man, Brian and I were working in a different company when it was announced that Hugh Jackman would play Wolverine. And the first pictures of him came out and people were calling him Hugh Jackass on the internet. I'm not kidding, because everyone was like, who's this guy? No one had ever heard of him. And then he came in and just crushed it.
He was perfect for this character from day one.
Yeah, and so, you know, this, as happens when you get to these moments of finality, you look back on the entire thing and you're kind of reliving that as much as the character on the screen is reliving it. And I thought that was a really great moment and way for fans to achieve closure on this one. Okay, so those are our favorite moments. Now we're going to talk about the X-Men timeline. I mean, it's kind of hard with this movie because it doesn't really exist in the X-Men timeline.
No, if anything, it happens. The only continuity in my mind that it fits into are the first three X-Men films.
Right.
And then none of the, you know, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse, anything like that matters.
Yeah.
There's an awkward scene at the end of The Wolverine where Charles Xavier shows up. That was the button scene at the end of The Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
Is where Charles shows up and says something grave to Logan, and then they're kind of setting up like, okay, these two are going to be together in the next of the Wolverine trilogy, which is Logan. But to my knowledge, nothing that Charles said means anything to what actually happens in Logan.
I think everyone just kept, ignored the first two Wolverine movies.
honestly, like, that is what I loved about this movie so much. Because by this point, I got to be honest, I was, you know, and obviously now we're in a post-Infinity War and Endgame world where that all the threads got wrapped up and everything, and it's a different story. But at this point, I was a little over the shared universe thing and the emphasis on it and how I felt things like story and character arcs that happen in one film and things like that were being sacrificed on the altar of making sure everything fit together in the grander continuity and making sure we're feeding into this larger story. So that when they just said, here is a story that we tell in 2 hours and change about these characters, and they're going to be in a different place at the beginning than they were at the end, and you don't have to know 50 other movies to know what's going on, it felt like just a breath of fresh air for me. And I was so glad that they did that. And I was, you know, before the whole Disney Fox merger, I was really hoping that this was the strategy that they were going to take moving forward. Is like, you know what, we don't have to, maybe we'll have some movies that tie together, but otherwise we're just going to tell these stories, because that's what comic books do for the most part. There are arcs, but there are a million arcs and there's a million things going on. And sometimes there's just an issue that takes place where something happens, you know, and
in an alternate universe where everything is purple and nothing really matters.
Right. So the fact that it didn't feel like it had to tie into the continuity was my absolute favorite part of the film by far, or at least at the beginning. And then obviously I saw the movie and I enjoyed all the aspects of it we've talked about. But where does it rank? Where have we ranked it? It takes place outside of the timeline, but it is part of the pantheon. So we're going to put it in its proper place. Warvis, where is Logan ranked in the X-Men universe movies?
In Sci-Fi Wire's official ranking of the X-Men movies, Logan ranks number 1 out of 11, just ahead of X2, X-Men United.
I think that's accurate.
Good.
Good. It should be.
Absolutely.
It's the best X-Men movie, hands down.
This is the thing. I don't know that it's the best X-Men movie, right? Because it's not about the X-Men.
I know what you mean.
Like, if you look at X2 or even First Class or Days of Future Past, those are more the ensemble X-Men movies. But
I suppose maybe mutant movie might be the proper term.
That's a great way to put it. And I think, I mean, just in terms of the quality of the film, I mean, I honestly was a little bummed that this movie did not even get into the discussion for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it deserved it for 2017.
Was it screenplay?
I think so.
I think it was like screenplay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I think it deserved better than that from the award community.
Hugh Jackman should have been nominated for Best Actor.
They've certainly done, you know, body of work nominations before, and I think it merits it on the film alone. But just to pay tribute to his
certainly
creation of this character and legitimizing of a character who a lot of people didn't think could work on screen at all.
And then 17 years later.
Yeah, here we are. That is Logan. Not a crowd pleaser, not going to have people cheering in their seats for the most part, but definitely the most emotionally impactful X-Men film there is, and one of the most emotionally impactful superhero films ever made.
Most human mutant movie of them all.
There you go. And that is the end of our podcast. I want to thank Brian and Caitlin for joining me.
Thank you.
It has been delightful.
Thanks a lot, guys. Oh, you didn't even mention Logan Noir.
Oh, we should mention that.
Very quickly.
Actually, this is good with Adam mentioning that it's the most emotionally resonant mutant movie, is that's what we're calling it. But for anyone who has the Blu-ray of Logan and hasn't
Brian
watched...
Brian has every Blu-ray in existence.
Only the best ones.
This is one of the L's that I have, is Logan.
Ah.
Oh, that's right. They're...
they're all alphabetical. Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, it's very amusing to come to my apartment if you want to see. But... if you have a chance to watch Logan Noir, which is the exact same cut of the film, but it's in black and white, it doesn't make the film any better or worse, but it is fascinating to watch because in many ways it is a different experience. Mm-hmm. It does emphasize, and I think it's, Logan's been compared to a Western in a lot of
Unforgiven
reviews,
was the one
which
I
is
always,
which is Unforgiven's yeah. a good one, which is more of a kind of an anti-Western than a Western, but it's to me that's a little simplistic to call it a Western, but... The black and white does emphasize how old everything feels. In some ways, it makes it feel even a little bit more dangerous. Yeah. So if you have a chance to watch it again, because why wouldn't you want to watch Logan again? Check out the black and white one.
Logan Noir. And after you do that, be sure to come back here and review and rate this podcast. Leave us some comments. We want to know what you think. Subscribe, because there's going to be lots more of this coming up. And... join us again tomorrow when we unpack the next movie in the X franchise, Deadpool 2. So stick around for that. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.